Monday afternoon. So much to get to the weekend. Just a real quick list of the sponsors here for today. Of course, it's the Lee's Air Hotline, which is 559-320-1430. The way to reach our show, once again, 559-320-1430. The way to reach our show. Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing also sponsoring our weather check. Of course, the weather, rain for most of the day so far today. It looks like it's dissipated just a little bit, but we'll get a little more drizzle, and I think we may be past it after a little bit longer. Could see some storms forming later in the evening tonight, but who knows what the radar will look like. It's just damp. Let's just say that. 54 degrees, cloudy, a high of 55, low of 48 overnight. It'll be overcast tomorrow. We'll get some sun Wednesday and maybe a little bit of drizzle on the back end of the week, potentially. But I would say that's more in the earlier portion of the days as opposed to later. And then Saturday, I think we'll have a pretty decent weather night for the Fresno State game next Saturday, the home finale, the Ag night, the boots and buckles, whiteouts for Fresno State as they honor the V, the green V in the Central Valley. 60 degrees, partly cloudy, so but could get a little chilly towards the tail end of the game against Utah State. Like I said, we got a lot to dive into, a lot to get into, 2 hours before we send it off to Monday Night Football here on 1430 ESPN. Of course, it's Cowboys and Raiders from Las Vegas. Two fan bases that I know are here ingrained in the Central Valley, ready to lock in and watch that one on Monday night as well. So good to get into that, and we'll get into that game with you for sure later on in the program. We also have Dan Rusinowski. He's going to join us at around 4:20 or so, talking San Jose Sharks. Wanted to get him on. Felt like this was a good opportunity to do so. The Sharks have played very good hockey. They've got a superstar in Macklin Celebrini. We'll dive into the numbers and talk with him, Dan Rusinowski, about what has been going on with the Sharks. Like I said, we'll do a Who's Been Naughty, Who's Been Nice. We'll get into everything as well. And looks like we're streaming as well. Finally, we're on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch. Looks like we're live there, so be sure to tune in there. That's right. We're hoping to fix the streaming and all that stuff. I know there's been some streaming stuff as of late, and we're doing this right now. Obviously, we have the streaming portion of it, but if you try to listen on the ESPN app right now, we're still working on getting that all fixed. Jorge, I got your mic on.
Yeah, no.
Set the record on it.
Yeah, we've been working. We had a computer down, which is one of the computers that we use to, you know, get everything situated for the website and the app.
Certainly.
Old episodes have already been posted, though, if you want to go back and listen to them. So feel free to go into our website and look at those. We're just not live streaming.
Yeah, yet. Exactly. So that's what we got for you there, and that's kind of the situation. Hopefully we'll get it rectified soon, and we should be pretty soon here, pretty soon. Now, you broke the bubble just a little bit, but that's fine, because usually how we start on these Monday shows is exactly where I always go, which is always the question that's on my mind. Jorge, how was your weekend?
Hello there, Phil. Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good. Besides rain,
yeah.
I did have a little rain inside my room on Friday.
You got a leak?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
But it got fixed. It got fixed right away, and it was fine. I was fine.
That's good. That's good. I'm glad you got it fixed, because leaks are not certainly something that anybody wants in any capacity. And I was hearing some other people were dealing with some leakage, per se, in that as well. And hopefully people withstood this rainstorm that has just continued to go all through the Central Valley the last, 5 days or so? 4 days, basically since Thursday night, Thursday afternoon, all the way till today. We have been dealing with with the rain on and off, and I don't know if I've seen 5 days with more rain here in the Central Valley than I think I've seen now. I know there's been big streaks, but this feels like could I don't know if it's record setting, but it for persistent rain over 5 days, this feels like a lot.
I think it was like 2 years ago, whenever that amount of 10 feet of snow fell on on a...
Oh, I bet you Shaver, yeah. China Peak better be loving what's going on right now.
Oh, yeah. But I think that was the like a whole week and a half of just rain.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. But this feels more constant. Like that one was breaks.
Yeah.
But this just like...
We've had like hours and hours and, and even maybe a whole day of consistent rain. Well, let me tell you, because I went to the Fresno State game. You were a person who thought better of it.
I really wanted to go because I wanted that bobblehead, but I just, you know, I was like, you know what? If I go and I get wet and I'm going to be miserable, like, I'm not going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to watch it on TV.
Well, I had a strategy of like how to kind of stay dry, and that strategy went out the window about 1 minute into my drive to Fresno State. Because I had to stop. I needed to grab a little snackage for me and some friends at Vons. And I went to Vons at Shepherd and Cedar before the game. I park. I get out of my car. And it is about yay thick of water, deep, right all around my car. I'm looking at like
two
inches of rain just pooling. In the middle of the Vons parking lot, my shoes are soaked through and through the moment I step down. And I'm on the phone with a friend, by the way, while this is all going on. And I'm like, oh, my shoes are wet. I'm done. I'm dead for the whole day. And that's how it turned out. I was dead the entire day. My feet were gone. I was soaked through and through. I got to the game. I was standing on the field for about an hour, for about a quarter. I lasted about a quarter, and the persistent rain just kept going and going, and I've never sat in the rain as long as I did that Saturday, and I finally wimped out. I, like, completely wimped out and went up to the press box. First time I ever wimped out at a Fresno State game and went to the press box to try to dry off, but I needed to. I needed to find a way to, like, get any sort of reprieve. My press pass, which, by the way, it was not waterproof, just disintegrated in my hands. Like I walked up to a security guard to get on the field after the game, and I was like, I tried to like puzzle piece it together to show that I can be on the field. It was pretty ridiculous how it all turned out. And of course, even after the game, we were in the post game, and I think we got out at around 11:45 when the post game pressers were done, and it started raining again. Because it stopped raining about in the middle of the second half and to the end of the game.
To the end of the game, yeah.
And it started raining again as I had my long trek back to my car, which is on campus by the library. And I'm just walking in more rain at like midnight. And I got home. And I'll tell you, I've never had a better shower than when I got home, got in the warm shower, just tried to warm up in some form or fashion. Fresh clothes, dry clothes. It was what I didn't go to bed till like about 1:15 because I was just kind of like just trying to settle in for the night. I couldn't go like bed straight away, but I'll tell you, I hope a lot of other people had the similar experience as I did, and it probably was a lot better because the Bulldogs did get a victory on Saturday too. It wasn't a depressing walk home. It was a let's go, let's do this, let's. Continue this win streak.
And I mean, by the fourth quarter, it was pretty empty.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. It looked pretty empty.
It was.
So I feel like, you know, everybody knew what was happening. And I think they saw that defense was just out of this world.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to start there, right, with the defensive side. And people are – I'll tell you what. I heard other people talking. And all I heard after that game was quarterback talk. And I get it. Quarterbacking is everything in this sport. People want to get on it. People want to analyze it. People want to look at it and parse things together. And I'll tell you what. I think Coach N's put it in best perspective today because – I don't think we've had a right to evaluate Carson Conklin yet this season based off of what we've seen, including last night's game, just in sense of the extenuating circumstances. Here's what Coach Entz had to say about Carson Conklin on Monday's presser today.
You know, all of a sudden you want to evaluate your quarterback in a downpour. You know, it becomes difficult. But I do think there was some positives. Like you said, the two-minute drive, the fourth and six conversion that we had. was a quick game. Got, you know, saw it, knew where he wanted to go with it, got it, you know, on rhythm. So again, I don't think a lot of people in the state of California threw for a lot of yards on Saturday night. So, there's improvement. I love the way that he is a competitor. I love the way how he interacts with his football team and with his teammates. So, we'll continue to keep coaching, and him and EJ have done a really good job of working together, helping Coach Davis put together a game plan, one that they like, things that they like to do, things that fit their skill set.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment to it. And he pointed out, this is a question I kind of asked to him, was, you know, did you feel like you were finding things out that Carson Conklin likes to do, likes to progress through as far as an offense is concerned, like his throws over the middle, his two-minute drive. I thought that was a great two-minute drive. At the end of the first half, to get a field goal out of that, you know, and maybe operating at a better clip in terms of that is certainly something, you know. Let's put in perspective, right? Coach mentioned about teams in California maybe not throwing the ball very well because of all the rain and everything. We'll put you in perspective. Carson Conklin threw for 95 yards on Saturday, and you're like, okay, that sounds horrible. The combined passing total between Boise State and San Diego State was 121 yards passing between both quarterbacks on Saturday, between the San Diego State and Boise State 17-7 win on Saturday night as well. So I would argue there are glimpses of things that we could evaluate from this game on Saturday and say, grading on a curve, it feels like at least Carson Conklin's trajectory is moving in a direction that I think I like. Once again, no turnovers happened on Saturday. Bulldogs are 2-0 when they don't turn the ball over. You like that. And I think we finally maybe get a normal evaluated game on a game against Utah State on Saturday. No weather conditions, no kind of craziness in terms of the developing storyline surrounding it. He needs to prove it Saturday. I'll tell you that. That's where my perspective is. I think there's a call to believe that I think Carson Conklin now finally needs to step up and play well. But you got to survive in a game like this on Saturday. I mean, people, you could have watching the game versus being at the game. You don't realize how horrendous that rainfall was. That was as hard of a rainfall I've seen and consistent that I've seen at a Fresno State game, I think, ever. I asked my parents, who've been to plenty of games, and they said it is probably the most consistent, persistent rain that Fresno State's ever had to play in, from their perspective. A lot of people felt like Saturday's game may have been the worst weather game Fresno State has seen in quite some time. So Coach made a really good point in terms of evaluating, but I think there's a situations where I think when Carson Conklin rolls out, I don't think he's quite as effective at all on the passing side of things, going to the sideline, rolling out. But his perspective of finding throws down the middle, I felt confident on the middle throws in this Wyoming defense that he was able to find some spots. Some players dropped some horrible passes too, by the way. I don't know if they have drops counted in the stat sheet here, but I can count a few from what I saw on Saturday as well. You know, it's not all on Conklin there. But we talked about full drives, right, Jorge?
Yes.
We talked about where are we going to see the full sustained drive. How about opening drive, 10 plays, 73 yards, touchdown? Is that not what you wanted to start the game in the rain?
Yeah.
How about 11 plays, 58 yards, the results in a field goal? Ball was started at our own 20. How about ball at our own 36, driving 16 plays, 55 yards, led to a field goal that was missed, but it's driving the ball down the field. Of course, you had the one play, 58-yard touchdown on Arsenal that basically broke the game open and all that, but I'm counting three drives that we did not have against Boise that showed that they can move the football down the field. So is our offense improving? I'd say so. I don't think there's anything to blame about what it looked like. And I hear Fresno State fans are like, oh, we got to bench the guy. We got to put the guy away. He's not doing anything for us. But I say you give a little perspective. You take a little look at what has been going on through this season and through what it's been, And take the things in the grain of salt of what the context of these games are and look at where it ended up. A 24-3 victory. You've been setting your defense up to perform admirably in this game as well. Look at where Fresno State gave the ball to Wyoming all game. Not a single possession from Wyoming started in Fresno State territory. The closest they got to starting territory for Wyoming, the best field position they had was ball starting at the 41. That was turnover on downs. Wyoming had to punt that. They had a 6-play, 1-yard drive on that drive with the ball at the 41. You know, I thought it was a fantastic game. I thought it was one of the best complete games we've seen in all three phases from both sides, considering the circumstance. This is not the offense's job to win football games for this Bulldog side. It will need to perform better against Utah State, who has a better offense. Yes, we will need to see more plays pulled out. But the defense is what has made this team what it is at 7-3 right now and contending in this Mountain West. And don't you get that mixed up. And that's my perspective on it. I don't know, Jorge, you watch from the TV perspective. I don't know what the conversations were, but what are your thoughts? What are you wanting more, or am I giving you context here to believe that this is what is enough to win this Mountain West, which clearly is such a crapshoot at this point with 2 weeks to go?
Yeah, I'm happy for the win. I'm happy that the defense performed, you know, like they've been performing pretty much all season. I think what a lot of people are just not happy with is now we're not getting touchdowns. It feels like we're not getting
three not touchdowns enough
with our offense.
Yeah, three with our offense.
But it feels like we're missing something.
Three in the driving rain, in the crappy weather. I get it. But now we're like, I want Fresno State fans to understand that when I hear what people say and they want more, I hear consistent moving of the goalposts on where their expectations are of this team and what your expectations are versus what we actually have as a football team. Yeah, this is a grind-it-out, Iowa-style, run-the-ball, defense-first, don't-beat-yourselves kind of football team that is going to suck the life out of a football game. And I understand there's a difference between good football and entertaining football. Bulldog fans want entertaining football. I know it. I know. And that's really, is that where you're saying, Jorge? I think you're not being entertained by the football you watch from the Fresno State side. Is that correct?
Maybe. I mean, the defense is fantastic, I want to say.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we expected, maybe it's because I expected more from our quarterback. Yeah, I expected him to be a little bit, especially the way he played at Sacramento State. You know,
yeah.
he was out there throwing the ball, doing all these things, which it's, I don't know if he's limited here or he just, it's different type of, it definitely is different type of players and different type of levels. But I don't know, it feels like, yeah, we're not being entertained by just the way that it, That he's playing.
But is that the job of this team to entertain you, or is it the job of the team to win?
Both.
All right. Hey, I mean, at least be honest with you. You're being honest with
it. I understand it. Like,
I get it.
I like to win. I like to win, yeah. Definitely. And I want to win however it is. I just feel like maybe it, I don't know. Sometimes it feels like we could have had the same thing with AJ.
With EJ?
EJ.
I don't know if we could have, because the turnovers were getting to a point where you were putting a defense that is good, fantastic, but putting it in basically impossible situations earlier in the year that set you up in situations where you're down, where you're playing from behind. I wonder if people understand that when you play from ahead, you have everything to your advantage in a football game, even if it's 7-0 on the opening drive. And you feel like 7-3 for the longest time of how that game went. You're sitting there like, how are we struggling against this team? And I say, we are just controlling what is in front of us in this game. Wyoming completed one pass in the first half. One pass in the entire first half. And that was that 40-yard bomb on their first drive that set up the field goal, then I would say argue, I cannot believe that field goal went through, judging how that kicker kicked it in terms of it. How about 200-plus rushing yards, Jorge, on the ground for the first time in since 2022 in a conference game for the Bulldogs? How about that? I find that entertaining. But maybe that's just me being a different kind of person who has different kind of sensibilities in terms of what I want out of my football. And we are trained as Fresno State fans to sit there and remember the Hayner days, remember the Marion days, remember the Carr days, and all the other great passers that come through. And we have gotten a grain to thinking that's the great football that should be. But there's a different side of the coin when it comes to football. This is the other side of the coin right now. And the Bulldogs are 7-3 because of it.
I think there's another thing, too. And you speak of it very well, because this is a different type of football and that there's a different type of coach.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't Pat Hill. This isn't, you know, Coach Stedford.
Yeah.
Who kind of had the same type of mentality football-wise, right? There's differences, but they were pass first, you know, and have a good running game.
Yeah.
And I think we're thinking that that's gonna help. That's gonna help.
We think it's the only way to win.
Yeah,
and there are many other ways to win football games.
We've been, you know, just through this games for so long here in Fresno that that's just one way to that we've been for the longest time. But I feel like this is good that Ennis is coming in, and maybe there's this different type of football. It's gonna change a little bit.
What did he say at the beginning of it? What did he say at the beginning? What he was hired. Toughness wins. Toughness wins. What are we doing the most right now? Is being tough on defense, being tough in the run game. 216 on the ground. Come on. It's tough.
Also, we got our seventh win, so yeah. a better bowl game.
We're there. We are two wins away from, I would argue, I think, pretty much getting to a Mountain West championship. Regarding, you know, like, I think there's a real... Whatever the whole situation is, we'll break it down more tomorrow. I think we have more time to sit down and break it down. But I think this team can continue to prove to this fan base that they can win differently. And I think this fan base needs to get used to the idea that it can be different in the way it plays. This is Big Ten football, man. This is grinding out. You know, this is North Dakota football. And how did North Dakota do? How about 9 natties? On top of what they were doing. It's just win, baby. That's what it is. Half our fan base is Raider fans. They should know that. Anyways. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're just getting started here. We'll have the Who's Been Naughty, Who's Been Nice. Join us on the Leagues Air hotline as well, 559-320-1430. If you got any comments on this Fresno State game, Fresno State side, want to hear from you. Challenge me. Come on. Tell me I'm wrong. I think this team has been fantastic. I think the quarterback's been what it needs to be. So stay with us. Behind the Bench rolls along on 1430 ESPN. Leader. All right. So we are just getting rolling here on our weekend coverage. Of course, all of our reaction today throughout what has been a fun sports weekend. Of course, highlighted by that Fresno State win 7-3. Let me hear you. It's fantastic. Come on. Not many seasons we get 7. Better than last year. Better than last year, I'll say that for sure. you take that, Jorge. After last year's season, we had to cover.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
I like this one.
Like this one better. I like this one better too. Okay, let's talk about who's been naughty, who's been nice from the NFL weekend, though. Let's get into some NFL talk. I want to do it now because I don't want to have Dan Rizanowski waiting on the phone line at the start of hour two. So let's do that. So you want to do some who's been naughty, who's been nice? Where do we want to start this this segment here?
Let's go. Let's start with who's been naughty.
Who's been naughty? Well, why don't we start with Ja'Marr Chase out there with the Cincinnati Bengals? Well, first of all, the Bengals just totally letting a game get away from them against Pittsburgh. But in the late stages, and as you heard, Ja'Marr Chase allegedly and apparently via a video spitting on Jalen Ramsey, which led to Jalen Ramsey going, you know, crazy, as I would, in terms of retaliating to Ja'Marr Chase in a physical fashion during that football game. and it now warranting a one-game suspension in the eyes of the NFL. I would say it is warranted for sure, although I might be slightly biased because my Patriots play the Cincinnati Bengals this week, and I would like to not have to deal with Ja'Marr Chase as a football player. But I'm not looking that way either. But let's be honest, I think a one-game suspension warranted. Jalen Carter got suspended for the one game, although to be fair, it was kind of retroactively since he basically missed the entire game between the Cowboys and Eagles at the beginning of the year on the other spitting incident. But just don't spit on a man, right, Jorge? It's just something you don't do, regardless of how much you don't like somebody.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it was like towards him, but he did spit.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to, you know, be devil's advocate and say that, you know, it wasn't towards him, but anything. I mean, the looks wasn't great.
Nope, not great.
Especially with all the cameras around, you're not going to get away with it. Like, why are you doing it in the first place?
Right, exactly. So, Ja'Marr Chase, shame on you. Enjoy your week off. And we'll see you in week 13. So there you go. Let's do a Who's Been Ice. Let's start with Devontae Adams. Devontae, 1,000 career receiving catches, receptions, 1,000 receptions for Devontae. And it came on a touchdown, which is nice. And do you want to hear another crazy thing about that mark from Devontae Adams, Jorge?
What's that?
He became the 17th player to get the most receptions and get 1,000 receptions, which he wears 17 in his number on his jersey. So he becomes the 17th player, and he is number 17 to do so.
A numbers thing, huh?
Yeah. So I think there's, hold on, I'm looking it up in terms of career receptions. You obviously know number one. And that's Jerry Rice.
He's got like 10,000 more.
No, he's only at 1549 right now. Only 1549.
Just a few more.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wonder if we could, I got all the names in front of me. There's some good ones in here. Devontae's tied with Hines Ward right now at 1,000 on the dot in terms of it. He's the 17. Guys, you want to hear some other names? You just want me to list all the other 1,000 reception guys?
Let me see if I could tell you. Okay, reception, and this is, let's see.
1,000 career. There's
Moss, of course.
Moss is in there, yeah.
Let's see.
No, he's not in there, actually. Excuse me. He's at 982.
Wow.
He never got to 1,000. Yeah.
I'm shocked by that.
Yep.
All right. Megatron?
Yes, Calvin Johnson.
Calvin Johnson.
No, Calvin Johnson is not there.
Wow. Okay, last one.
You're 0-2 right now. Calvin Johnson only has 731.
Let me see. Larry Fitzgerald.
He's number two. He has 1,432 receptions, only behind Jerry Rice, Larry Fitz. Man.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would have thought Moss had 1,000.
No. Moss didn't play like as long as some other people. He's not a volume reception guy. He's definitely yardage guy, but I don't think he's volume reception.
Here, and he claims to be the best receiver. Come on. Get out of here.
There's two active guys above Devontae Adams right now.
There's
two active players that are above Devontae in terms of 1,000 receptions plus.
Oh, I'm thinking older than Devontae?
Yeah, older. Well, one's like probably the same age. One's like 3 or 4 years older.
Can't think of the names.
Travis Kelce.
Really?
Yeah, he's number 12 on the list. Keenan Allen.
Yeah, that's right. He got to
1,000 this year.
1,000 this year.
Yeah. Here's your names from top to bottom till Devontae. Jerry Rice, number one. Then Larry Fitz. Then Tony Gonzalez. Then Jason Witten. Marvin Harrison. Chris Carter. Tim Brown. Terrell Owens. Anquan Boldin. Reggie Wayne. Andre Johnson. Travis Kelce, Steve Smith Sr., Keenan Allen, Isaac Bruce, Devontae Adams, Hines Ward. Those are your thousands, guys.
Wow.
A lot of Niners.
Yeah.
A lot of Niners in there. Let's do a Who's Benatti. We're going to the Minnesota Vikings, and specifically, you know, J.J. McCarthy and the way they kind of played. I do like the idea that they did come back and almost beat that Bears team. But, boy, to just putz around for how many quarters they did just with nothing going on for it, that's a rough look for the Vikings, especially when you're in a game where your season's on the line. And, dang it, they have allowed the Bears to contend this year.
I want the Bears to go to the playoffs.
Just to see them make a fool of themselves?
So they could play the Niners and we could beat them.
You want to play?
Honestly, I can't cage the Bears.
No.
At first, I thought they were not good. Then all of a sudden, they're playing really well. And then they play some games where, like, how do you win this? It makes no sense.
J.J. McCarthy was 10 for 22 before the fourth quarter. 74 yards passing, two INTs through the first three quarters of that game for Minnesota. Did they make the wrong choice? I think they did. I think they should have kept Sam Darnold, right?
I think they should have kept Sam Darnold at least one more season.
I think they should have traded McCarthy and said, here's your unknown commodity. We know what we like with Sam Darnold here. You know, but
then again, Sam Darnold did struggle at times.
Just one game, though, and that Rams game. We'll talk about it. Next, Benice. How about Josh Allen? My God. There have been three games in NFL history where a quarterback has passed for three and ran for three touchdowns in a game. He has the other one, and Otto Graham has the other one as well. So Josh Allen just doing it again. 75 rushing touchdowns in his career. That's tied with Cam Newton. His next rushing touchdown will be the most in NFL history at quarterback. Did you ever think Josh Allen would be the most prolific running quarterback in the National Football League based off of how his ability to just punish defenders at the goal line? I don't know if I ever would have had that on my bingo card, but Jorge, it's just another mark of where Josh Allen is as a player and what he's got to do to have the Bills win a football game, by the way, which they were playing tennis with the Bucs, basically, with the lead back and forth, and finally something had to give, and the Bills just kept going. One of those avalanche games sometimes. I don't know if there's any other quarterback in the league that is more terrifying to root against than Josh Allen out there.
Yeah, the Bucs team had him on the ropes a few times, but it was a very entertaining game, and quite frankly, the way that Josh Allen pulled it out was kind of insane. I didn't think, you know, him coming out of high school, like, I didn't think he had, like, you know, a running game.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember him in college, especially community college, with really, he was out there, man. He run.
Yeah. Running out there, Ridley?
He was out there.
Of course. Josh Allen was 5 for 8 with 134 yards and two touchdowns when he threw for more than when he had 15-plus air yards passing on his passes. So downfield, we're talking downfield, he was 5 for 8 for 134 and two touchdowns. I will say that Bucs defense is starting to show its warts a little bit in terms of that. So there could be some concerns if you're a Buccaneers fan. But Josh Allen, my goodness, there you go. You've been nice. Let's go to a Who's Been Naughty, my last Been Naughty. And we go to Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta once again, I get it. Michael Penix got hurt in that game, the knee injury. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But had that game all the way. Felt like the Panthers are giving the Falcons every chance to win that football game. And yet the Falcons just couldn't stomp their foot down on a Panthers team that was trying to give it away. And the Falcons deserve to be the losers there. They're now 3-7. Maybe I would say in terms of the talent level as a team, the most disappointing team out there based off of what maybe you could consider a team that could contend this year. But they have just been a mess. And Jorge, it doesn't even get any better for them. Good news for the Rams fans. Guess what? Do you know who has their first-round pick this year, Jorge? The Los Angeles Rams because of a trade. In the NFL draft, last NFL draft. So the Falcons are not incentivized to lose these games, Jorge, and yet here they are slipping, 3-7, looking horrible. And they blow another one in overtime to the Panthers, and the Panthers are somehow 6-5 going into this Monday night game against the Niners next week.
That's another team where you're like, how?
Yeah.
How did you get here?
Like, right?
Like, what are you doing? Like, are you good?
You good, Falcons? Yeah. Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff from Atlanta. My last Ben Ice. Gotta give him props. I gotta give him props to Denver Broncos and the way they pulled that out. And essentially, sealing, I would say, at least the idea that Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs are not going to win this division. They are going to be a team that is going to have to win on the road. After losing to this Broncos team, they're now, what, 4 games back of this Broncos? Like 3.5 games back of this Broncos team? And with 7 to go, I would say the odds are slim of them getting into any spot here. And things are starting to get a little, I would say, a little dicey. A little dicey right now in terms of where the playoff picture looks in terms of Kansas City. Because let's keep in mind here, 5-5, Kansas City is. They still have to play Houston, who's 5-5. They have already played the Jaguars, who are a game up on them, Jorge, but they're essentially, they need to be above the Jaguars in record-wise because they lost to Jacksonville on that Monday. And they're 7-4 Chargers are above them, Jorge, and they're 2 games back, but they're essentially 2.5 back because they already lost the Chargers in Brazil. So the Chiefs aren't necessarily just going to find a way to get into this playoff picture. They are running, they can't catch the Bills. They lost to the Bills, who are 7-3. Like, Jorge, there's a set of, there, I think the Chiefs are, can I declare the Chiefs dead, or am I going to be the, is that going to be the kiss of death for me for the next rest of the year? Because they are running out of runway, and the Broncos shoving him into a locker last night after the Chiefs were leading. Mahomes had the lead with the ball up 3 in the fourth quarter, and they did not put that game away. I don't know.
I think it's too early for that. You got to remember who the Broncos are. The Broncos are a good team. They got a good defense. You know, they've been in the top of the NFL the whole entire season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, them and the Colts have been up there. So, yeah, no, I wouldn't put them out there yet.
989 teams in the Super Bowl era have started 5-5 or worse through 10 games and made the playoffs. 89 of them have gone to make the excuse me. 89 of them have made the playoffs out of the 989 teams. That's 9% chance. The Chiefs have, according to NFL history, 9% chance to make the playoffs. Now, circumstances outside of it. It's not 9% actually. It's whatever. Only 2 teams have ever started 5-5 or worse through 10 games and made it to the Super Bowl, and only one of them has ever won the entire thing, starting 5-5 or worse. And I know that team. It's one of my favorite teams. It's the one that started it all. Those 2001 New England Patriots.
Yeah, well, after, you go through, quarterback and stuff.
Yeah. Hey, Tom Brady never had to go on the road and win playoff games to start a playoff run. Tom Brady always had a home playoff game. He always won his division. I don't hear a guy. I'm just saying, we're going goat talk now. I think Mahomes has totally slipped from that conversation now. But I'm not gonna rain on a parade. I'm gonna rein it in a little bit because I've been dying to have this take come out.
I mean, he's got 3 rings, so I don't know.
And Brady's got 7. People were wanting to crown Mahomes for the longest time. Now he can't even win his own division. All right, let's take a break. That was the Who's Been Audi, Who's Been Ice of the weekend.
Come on, your division has the Jets and the Dolphins. Come on.
Yeah, and they come on. Okay. All right. Yeah. Win. You know they got to win games too, just like anybody else. let's take a break. We'll come back with more Behind the Bench. Wrap up this hour next. Have another hour next after this. Stay with us. You're listening to Behind the Bench on 1430 ESPN. The Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, as we roll along on this show. Hey, injury report brought to you by Davis and Van Wagenen, injury law firm here in local Fresno and Central Valley areas. Of course, all the way to up and down California coast. They got you here, the friends that you need in a moment where injury will come to you. They got your back, so be sure to stop by now. injury report assessing some of the injuries from this NFL Week 11. A couple of them of note, of course, Michael Penix, Jorge, one of them, with the knee injury. And like we said, it kind of affects the Rams. Kirk Cousins now seems to be the foreseeable starter for this Falcons team moving forward. Seems like it was careening to the inevitable with the Falcons team of having that situation. No need to say much more about it. The other one of note is Pittsburgh looks like they're going to be down Aaron Rodgers for a little bit. There's some fear that he broke a bone in his left wrist. Sounds like he's already done for next week against Chicago. So there you go, Jorge. More Chicago possible wins down the stretch. Can old man Aaron Rodgers come back from it's not his throwing wrist, but it's a wrist injury nonetheless. And I'm not quite sure if it changes anything. Aaron Rodgers wasn't really like lighting up the world for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but
I think he was playing well. I mean, they have to go to a backup now, so that's always that's not good when you're in the middle of the season. But I mean, I don't know how bad his injury is.
Yeah, I we'll see. I kind of like Mason Rudolph more than other people. He played very well in the. Did the Pittsburgh Steelers, they were in Buffalo for a playoff game a couple years ago. And I think he played particularly all right in that playoff game a couple years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
So,
yeah.
I'm not like totally out on it as well. Trying to think if there was any other big injury stuff. The Niners avoided some injury stuff, it looks like. Purdy looked great. How about that? Feel good about Purdy yesterday? His toe didn't seem to limit him. 19 for 26, 200 yards passing, 3 touchdowns. That's what you need. And we were talking about with Tenveer. You just need games to just kind of get under your belt before you start playing some of the serious opponents. And I think that's as good of a result as you could take it from the 49er perspective.
I mean, you get some tough opponents coming up, like the you know the Browns, the Titans, and what's the other one?
You got Browns, Titans, Panthers.
Panthers.
Next three. You got Panthers, Browns, Titans, the next three.
I mean, those are tough opponents, right?
I think the Browns are tough. Especially if it's in Cleveland. It is in Cleveland. So I'm a little wary of Browns because I just think of what happened 2 years ago. And by the way, you just lost Eddie Pinheiro for a couple weeks. So new kicker watch coming for the 49ers. We'll see what they bring in. Hey,
he was doing so good too.
Jake Moody, want to come back? No.
He's happy in Chicago now.
He's happy in Chicago, that's for sure. Although they got a.
He's from Chicago, by the way.
Is he? Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Well, good for him. All right, Jorge, let's take a break. When we come back, we have hour number two next on 1430 ESPN. Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader.
He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again in anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right, Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Hour number two of our show before we send it off to Monday Night Football, where we send it to Las Vegas. That's right, the Raiders hosting the Cowboys tonight. You can listen to it right here on 1430 ESPN. Got a lot of good things coming up this week, by the way. Just a heads up for you all. Hey, we got a special basketball broadcast coming up Wednesday. That's right. We're doing High School Hoops Early Edition. As many of you heard, and I'm going to announce it here. I don't know if we've really formally publicized this yet, but I'm going to announce it today. Jalen Green has been getting his jersey, is going to get his jersey retired by San Joaquin Memorial High School on Wednesday when they open their season against Bakersfield High. And we have decided to be a part of that and be on the broadcast for it. We are broadcasting that live. 7 p.m. tip-off with a 6:45 pregame between Bakersfield and San Joaquin Memorial. Myself and Paul Metters will be there at San Joaquin Memorial for the ceremony, and we will be there. And I believe we will get a little bit of a Jalen Green interview as well during this broadcast. So be sure to tune in, 6:45 pregame, 7 p.m. tip-off. If anything changes, we will let you know as we get closer. That is on Wednesday, this Wednesday. So tune in, special edition high school hoops for you there. We also have Friday Night Lights, which we just got confirmation that we're good to go with that, which is at Central East versus Clovis. We know this. It's the 1AA championship. Myself, Paul Metters will be on the call. No Pat Hill. Pat's at a wedding. So as many of you heard on the broadcast, so Pat will be out of town, and it'll just be myself and Paul, but should be a fantastic matchup between two teams that are playing as good football as it can be out there, and that's what we got for you this week. All right, so let's talk more NFL in terms of what we've got with the 49ers, Rams from yesterday. I can start with the 49ers here just a little bit because I just don't know if I have a whole lot to offer with this game other than they did the thing they needed to do. Although I will argue it is somewhat concerning that the completion record was completed by Jacoby Brissett yesterday at 47 for 57 from Jacoby Brissett, 452 yards on this defense, two TDs, two INTs. 452 passing yards are the seventh most in a game in Arizona history, the most since 08, since Kurt Warner was passing. If the Cardinals did not commit 17 penalties for 130 yards, you could consider that this game could be closer because the Niners defense was affording all kinds of opportunities to this Cardinals offense. By the way, that's the most penalties in a game since 2004 that a team's committed. Minus 16 penalty margin, the second worst by any team in this century since the Raiders and the Bucks, and it's the worst by the Cardinals since World War II. Yes, that World War II.
I think it said like in the 30s.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Michael Wilson, a guy going 15 catches, 185 yards on y'all. I don't know if it breeds confidence in what this defense is capable of, because that kind of production from that Cardinals offense isn't necessarily the one that will breed confidence moving forward, especially when you play. I wouldn't say you're not going to be playing world beaters on offenses the next couple of weeks here. The Panthers, I would say, are a middle-of-the-road offense. The Browns are a subpar offense, what we saw from Shedeur Sanders this weekend. But outside of that, it'll get serious when you face the Colts, the Bears, and the Seahawks to close out the year. So, and if you feel like you're going to make the playoffs, all you're going to get is pretty decent offenses moving forward. So, Jorge, concerned, not concerned. You are the king of keeping things cool when there are some historical bad things going on with this defense. Where is your level of concern?
Historical?
Yes. Yes.
No.
47 for 57.
You're being overdramatic. There's not historical. You obviously didn't watch the...
What do you mean that's not historical? It is literally the most completions in NFL history in a single game for the quarterback.
You didn't watch the Niners in the late 2000s.
I am literally staring at a stat that says this is the most that's ever happened in NFL history to this defense.
I don't know. He scored one touchdown.
Two touchdowns.
Because of the last one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Two touchdowns.
Okay. I get it. And then maybe it's the garbage time thing. And it's nice to pick them off twice. And I guess that's something that you can, at least you turn the ball over on them, because the Niners have been historically bad at the turnover rate this season as well. Right?
Yeah.
So maybe there's some stuff to that, but you're not you're just not getting the stops I would say you need to breed confidence that an elite team like any of the teams above you in the NFC standings right now, which is what? Philadelphia, L.A., Seattle, Chicago, Green Bay, Tampa.
Chicago.
Chicago scores points. Whatever you feel about Chicago. And we'll see it second week to the last week of the year there.
Yeah.
But I'd be sitting there as a Niner fan, and maybe I'll get a perspective from some of the Niner fan that comes in tomorrow on this perspective. But I'd be concerned. I'd be concerned with what statistical output the Niners defense is putting out there. And I don't know what changes. Obviously, there's no Fred. Obviously, there's no Bosa. And clearly, this is not the unit the Niners envisioned going into week 11 and going to week 12 now with a 7-4 record. But I guess a win is a win is a win, if that's what you're going to go for in terms of that conversation. But I wonder if a nationally televised game next Monday could expose a lot against this Carolina team moving forward.
When have we played differently? Like, we always played the same. Like, we're always playing the same. And, yeah, we lost games, yes, of course. But, you know, we're not that bad of a team. Like, you make it seem like we're, you know, barely hanging on in this win.
No, you're not. But I'm saying, well, okay. Maybe I need to reframe the perspective of what this Niners season is, because I thought the Niners were Super Bowl or bust for me at the beginning of the year. And in my perspective, this is not a Super Bowl team, right?
No. Look, what do
Niners fans want this year? You want to get in the playoffs? Based off the circumstances?
Give those players who are, you know, young some playoff experience.
Okay.
Because that's huge you don't get that a lot. And if you could give those, you know, pretty much our entire defense is, you know, 1 or 2 year players.
Yeah.
And if we could get those players to get some playoff experience in the road or at home, I'm happy with that. You know? Yeah, I would love to get to a play more than that. But I'm realistic knowing that our defense lost huge pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no replacing them. There's no replacing them. Now, are we playing bad? I wouldn't say too bad, but yeah. We could be better, definitely. Now, how are we going to be better? There's no other way but just keep going forward.
Niners were outgained by 207 yards on Sunday. That's the worst yardage margin in a Niner win since they were outgained 221 yards against the win against Tampa in 2007. Now, the opening drive was probably a contributor to that, because your opening drive was a one play, 1 yard touchdown from the Skyborg kickoff. Dude, he was slowing down so much, man. I was like, you kidding me? Skymore couldn't just put on the jets a little bit more? That dude was a chief. Where did his speed go? Did it stay in Kansas City?
I think you know what happened is he started going like side to side, and then all of a sudden found a route, and that by that time he was kind of already tired, and give, I honestly, Arizona has always had speed guys. So
yeah,
he was gonna get caught.
Crazy. George Kittle, 6 catches, 67 yards, 2 touchdowns. Fair to say, I think he's as healthy as he's been now.
And yeah, he's definitely been a big part of that offense.
50th career touchdown reception for George Kittle. By the way, passing Dwight Clark and Billy Wilson to move into 5th all time on the Niners touchdown reception list. Christian McCaffrey also had a big game, 13 rushes, 81 yards, 2 touchdowns, 50 through the air as well, and another touchdown. So 3 total touchdowns for Christian McCaffrey. 17th career game with a rushing touchdown, receiving touchdown, extending the NFL record by a player in this game. From the Rams' perspective, let's move on, unless you got anything else from that Niners game.
We won.
You won. Rams-Seahawks was billed as a big-time heavyweight bout, title bout between two contenders. I don't know if it necessarily delivered. It had drama. I don't know if we saw the prolific offenses that we may have been looking for from both of these sides. But in a game like that, it can get tighter. It felt like a playoff game. It really did. It just felt like a playoff game, I think, in that perspective. And one quarterback shined in the times they needed him to shine, and one quarterback shrunk in the times they needed to shrink. Stafford found plays to make the Rams win this football game in multiple areas, finding Devontae Adams in key situations, finding Puka Nacua in key situations. Kyren Williams with another solid game from the ground. Were you thinking about this game in perspective of what was the bigger takeaway for you? Was it the Rams' ability to win this football game, or did the Seahawks, or is it the ability of the Seahawks kind of showing the mistakes they make in these games like this, including Sam Darnold, who threw four picks in this one? I knew the picks were starting to get a little, even though the record and everything was looking good and the stats were looking good. Darnold's pick rate was not anything to be like feeling good about from the Seattle perspective. He's been throwing a little more in picks than I think people want to be comfortable with.
Yeah, but I think what I was more concerned about was he didn't have time. That defense was, you know, all over him.
Like the playoff game.
Just exactly like the playoff game. It was like a mirror copy of it. But it, honestly, mm-hmm. it just, you know, if he has time, we know what he could do. But I was concerned more about that offensive line with the Seahawks. If you can't give him time, he's not going to work well.
Yeah.
We know that. We've seen that before. And if you want to win, you have to give him a little time. And I don't know if they were injured. I really don't. I don't know if they just couldn't handle the offense, offensive scheme or defensive scheme the Rams had. But, man, they had trouble all night.
Sam Darnold, when pressured against the Rams, he was 5 for 11 for 34 yards, 3 picks. He had 2 of his first 9 games combined when he was pressured. It's something about the Rams' pressure that it brings out something different from Sam Darnold in this game. And even despite that, they had a chance to win a game at the end with a field goal. So if I sit there from the Rams' perspective and think, well, thank God we won, because it felt like the Rams deserved to win that game more than the Seahawks did. If the Seahawks ended up pulling that out and winning 22-21, then it felt like the cat with 9 lives in that football game with the way they were given. Kind of a strange sequence at the end of the game, too, with the Rams offense trying to kind of throw for a first down in that situation, having to punt the ball away, giving plenty more time for the Seahawks to have a drive with, you know, 1:41 with, by the way, one of the most incredible punts I've ever seen in my life with the Rams. Did you see that ball just stick it right in front of the pylon on the out-of-bounds line at the one-yard line, inside the one-yard line? You got to go back and see where that ball stuck and put the Seahawks at the one-yard line. It was incredible, Jorge.
It feels like somebody was controlling the ball, you know?
Yeah. Insane stuff. Rams 8-2 for the first time. 8-2 are better for the first time since 2018. They went to the Super Bowl that year. This is their first outright lead of the NFC West, and now they feel like they're controlling things. It feels like there's two teams at the NFC now. Like, it's Eagles and Rams, right? Is that fair to say right now in the NFC with the way we've been seeing this thing?
I think that right now they are the best two teams.
Those are the teams you would say can go to the Super Bowl, have the ability to go to the Super Bowl. Jorge, which one would you pick based off of yesterday's performance? Rams or Eagles to make the Super Bowl out of the NFC?
Eagles struggle so much. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they were lucky that Dan Campbell just...
They struggled too, yeah.
Their defense is really good. I think I would like to see see which defense is better, the Rams or the Eagles.
I think I'd tick it to the Eagles' favor. I would tick the Rams' offense to the Rams' favor. I think if those two teams played again, it would be exactly how it kind of played out the last time, week 3, down to a field goal, make or miss league. Rams get that field goal blocked and they lose anyway, but the Rams had the Eagles basically in that game until they got the field goal blocked, right?
I feel that game was so early that you can't really – I feel like both teams hadn't expressed themselves or hadn't.
Well, think about what kind of pressure they could get in that Eagles game. Lane Johnson's now potentially out with a Lisfranc injury for the Eagles side. If you think about the Rams and the way they could play and get after a quarterback not having your top lineman is certainly going to be a big difference maker in that. So there's all kinds of different factors when it comes to it. It feels like we're at a collision course to a possible NFC championship between these two teams. I don't know if I really trust the Lions at all. I definitely don't trust the Bears. I don't trust the Packers. the Bucs are starting to slip. I don't trust their defense whatsoever. And it was important for the Rams to get this win because they have the Bucs next and can really start burying this Bucs team, which has been, you know, meddling a little bit the last few weeks. So, especially a team that just lost to Buffalo like that. So, I'm fascinated by this NFC race. I'm fascinated. This NFL season, man. This NFL season has been incredible. All right, Jorge, it's time. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk Sharks here. The Sharks, hey, they're great. They're a great hockey team right now. They are playing fantastic. They got a young stud who is playing his butt off. We're going to talk to the voice of the Sharks next. Dan Ruzanowski joins the show next on 1430 ESPN. Back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN. Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, as now we are joined on the Lee's Air Hotline here on 1430 ESPN by the voice of the San Jose Sharks. Dan Ruzanowski joining me now to talk about this team. Couldn't text you fast enough after a couple of thrilling wins on this road trip. And obviously, they're playing great hockey. Dan, I'm sure it is a thrill to call hockey games for this team so far this year. How are you doing on this Monday afternoon?
Well, I'm doing fantastically, Phil. And, you know, there's a lot of optimism and excitement about this very interesting San Jose Sharks team this season. It's what we were all hoping that we would see this season, is to progress toward where they really want to go. And I think that that's been very encouraging for the many legions of fans that we have in Northern California who have been following the team and, you know, trying to suffer with them a little bit the last couple of years, but understanding is the process by which they needed to grow. And that's where we're at.
Certainly, that's where we're at. And this team is in a good stretch here. Albeit the last two games, a couple of dropped games there. But outside of those, it's been thrilling wins. It's been come-from-behind wins. It's been some dominant defensive wins as well, keeping the teams off the scoreboard through and through. The Sharks have found ways to win in different kind of ways, and it comes from a lot of different areas. But what stands out to you about most right now as the Sharks sit here 8-8-3 through these first couple of months?
Well, especially the way things started, which was a little bit slow with some new guys coming in and trying to integrate and so forth in the last couple of years of tough Octobers. A lot of people wanted to get discouraged. But we saw from the beginning of training camp that young Macklin Celebrini was going to take another step forward in what's going to be a spectacular NHL career. Same with Will Smith, his compadre and line mate and running mate. But also a lot of other little things. You know, the goaltending has been outstanding the last couple of weeks. And that was a big part of the reason why the Sharks went seven straight games and picked up points and had a four-game winning streak. Yaroslav Askarov, in his previous five starts, had a 97.1 save percentage. In other words, 97 out of every 100 shots he gets, he stops. That's incredible. That's 24-carat goaltending. And I think that, you know, they were looking at it. They did a search. They only started keeping save percentages since 1955. And out of every single goalie that's ever played since then, he went through a five-game stretch where he had the highest save percentage without actually getting a shutout in any of those five games. 97.1%. That's just amazing. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that gets people really excited. It's not just Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith. It's Alex Wenberg with his consistent play. And it's Askarov and Nedeljkovic in goal. And a lot of things to get really, really excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're leaning on the goaltending star, you know, Askarov, Nedeljkovic, those guys, especially with the way they played, especially in games where you look at the measure of competition right now that they have played. You got to pinpoint the last time they were in the Shark Tank, going back-to-back nights of beating Winnipeg and Florida, two teams that are perennial contenders right now in hockey. I think of those kind of stretches that can grow a young team like that, to see those kind of games go through with wins. You know, you talk about how, Coach Warsawski just wants to see these guys visualize success through what they've done, not just have the so close games like they've had the last couple of years. Do you feel that when games like those go in the win column as opposed to maybe the last couple of years?
Well, I think you're right. I think it's really descriptive the way that you're talking about the team right now, Phil. It's very, very accurate in that when you beat a team like Winnipeg, and they won the President's Trophy last year with the best record in the NHL. Yeah, they didn't win the Stanley Cup, but you know they were one of the elite clubs. Florida's won the Stanley Cup 2 years in a row and have been to the final in each of the last three seasons. And yes, they're missing a couple of key guys, but they're still the Florida Panthers. And the Sharks aren't the Florida Panthers yet. But when they were able to shut things down, play a physical brand of hockey, have home ice advantage, get the fans at home excited, and really play a great brand of the game, I think that's a big step forward for the team. Oh, sure, there were other moments, too, like the game at Madison Square Garden where a lot of all of this started when Macklin Celebrini had 3 goals and 2 assists. And,
yeah,
you know, they beat the New York Rangers there, much to the chagrin of all the fans at the Garden. You know, that whole road trip was big, too. But I really think that the two games you talked about, the Winnipeg game, the Florida game, and also a game against Colorado, those are games that really lift the spirits of the team, raises the level of confidence, and allows them to try to get to that next level where they're going to get checked a little bit more tightly, as we're seeing with Macklin Celebrini right now, and where they're going to have to push through. That's the next challenge that the team has to deal with and is currently dealing with now with this big homestand this week.
Yeah, even other games like the Minnesota games, the two games in Minnesota down at St. Paul.
How about that game?
Yeah.
That's a game they probably shouldn't have won.
Yeah.
And you know what? It happens sometimes. The game against Seattle, they could have won and didn't. The game against Calgary was a low point. They just didn't have a great night that night. But the sandwich between that Calgary game were those two games. The Minnesota game, they got caught on the ice with the same three skaters for 3 minutes and 40 seconds. That's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
All three of those guys were dead tired. Minnesota was dominating. They were getting great goaltending, and the guys were doing just enough to keep the Wild to the outside. And we're talking players like Erickson Ek and Kirill Kaprizov. These are star, top-notch players that were giving their best, and the Sharks were holding them off. And they finally got that change. William Eklund got off the ice.
Oh, yeah.
Eklund Celebrini came on, and he scored just a spectacular goal. That was amazing. But you win games like that when you have your act together. And when it's not completely your night, you're getting good goaltending, you can win games like that. You know, the flip side of that was that Yaroslav Askarov was so good in Calgary, but the team just didn't have it. I mean, you get signs that that's going to kind of creep into your game. So we saw some signs of that in the Minnesota game. We saw some signs of it in the Calgary game, that they weren't going to have a good night. But then against Seattle, they had a nice bounce back. And, yeah, they lost the game, but they played with a lot more energy. They played with a kind of a resolve that they need to play. And so that tells me that even though they didn't win the game, they're on the verge of maybe getting out of this in a very short time. And you want to keep your bad moments. You want to keep your negative results to a minimum. You don't want to lose more than 2 games in a row if you can. And that's what the Sharks are bound and determined to do this week, starting with, you know, a big game. You know, there's a couple of big games, but Utah coming in, L.A. coming in with a big celebration for Joe Thornton on Thursday, and then Ottawa and Boston on Saturday, Sunday, back-to-back with all kinds of promotions going on at the rink.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big week for the team to take that next step forward when they know they're going to be challenged a lot more because teams know exactly what they're capable of.
I want to pinpoint just talking about Macklin himself, you know, and the contextualization of his start to his career. I got a stat here. Tied for fourth most points through the first 19 games of a season in NHL history, only to Wayne Gretzky and Sidney Crosby by a teenager, which is just remarkable to think about. And you pinpoint the moment when he scores that goal against Minnesota earlier this year that kind of really – he was going, but he really got going after that. And I hear Drew Remenda talk on the broadcast about that being a superstar moment where he is able to go one-on-one and win that game for them. You know, how do you contextualize what we've seen from Macklin just at what he has done as a teenager through these first games?
Well, there are people that are around this game that have been around for a long time, and they're using the word superstar to describe Macklin Celebrini. And remember, these are head coaches. One of them was Todd McLellan. He actually used that word in talking about Macklin Celebrini when he watched his first few games this year. Now, these people aren't exactly filled with heady praise for young kids. They're a little harder on them. They're a little bit more reticent to provide them with too much praise. But that's the kind of thing that this kid is earning each and every day. And, you know, when the Sharks drafted him, I thought my comparison was probably going to be somebody like Jonathan Toews, who's having, you know, an unbelievable career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now he's with Winnipeg, but, you know, all those years with the Blackhawks, winning 3 Stanley Cups and so forth. But I really think that instead of getting a top franchise player, they're getting a generational player in this kid. And he has the potential to be Sidney Crosby-like. And if he does that, you know, and, you know, the stat you gave is sort of, you know, indicative of that with all the people he's compared to and that list of teenagers who have had success, you want to kind of put the brakes on a little bit in terms of how much effusive praise you give him, but he's earning it every day. He's a three-zone player. He works as hard as anybody in the team. He's first on the ice. He's often last off. And, you know, he's learning from a guy who did that his whole career, Joe Thornton, who he's living with, him and his family right now. So it's an amazing story, and I think it's going to get even more interesting as time goes on. He's a fine young man. He's totally dedicated to the game of hockey. He's got a great relationship with Will Smith, the thickest thieves off the ice and on the ice. And it's, again, something for people in the Bay Area and all over Northern California, including, you know, the San Joaquin Valley area, to really latch onto is something to glom onto and be part of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the next step in the question is, you know, he is 19, he is young, and he went through his first NHL season, and like you said, the teams are going to try to really test him out as far as his ability to be able to sustain this kind of play, you know. And so the question is where the help comes from the rest of this team, right? And is that kind of what is going to be the formula to see if this team can tread water, maybe keep themselves in this conversation of a playoff picture, find some ways to win, and maybe you have a conversation of what the trade deadline could look like with this group and whether it's maybe a buy side or a sell side at that point. But it's
well, I think it's really interesting you say it that way because that's really a big goal, and it was it's always the goal when you're trying to build yourself back as the Sharks are currently doing. They want to be in that conversation when it comes to the playoffs. And right now they're in the middle of it. They're right in the thick of the conversation. They're staying with the pack, which is something that's a step forward from where they've been the last few years. Even with that slow start that they had, you know, they've really come back strongly. So that's part of it. You know, every little step you take is an important one, including the times that you have that aren't good, when you go through losing streaks, when you have times when you start to fall behind a little bit. How do you respond to that? How does Macklin Celebrini develop his leadership capability? He's already wearing an alternate captain's A on his sweater for home games, and I think that that's a good step forward because he's in the discussions with the leadership group, even at his young age, and yet he's not being given too much too soon. So what he's developing now are not only his ability to drag everybody into the fight, which he's really good at, but he's also developing his people management skills, which is another aspect of leadership that only takes time. You know, you can't turn an 18-year-old into a 25-year-old without living through some bumps and adolescent bruises. And even somebody as supremely talented as Celebrini is going to have his tough night. So not very many, but we haven't seen much of them, but I'll tell you what, that's going to be something we're really going to enjoy watching and developing here.
Well, I think of this home stretch as something that's going to be fascinating. You just see in the short term, right, the Kings have been a really good team this year so far. Ottawa's in a playoff conversation. Boston's been on fire since they lost 7 straight in the early part of their season. They've been on fire since then. Colorado, we know, you know, they have their ability to win games like they did. I think they haven't lost in regulation at home yet this year. So these next 5, including Utah, obviously, tomorrow, what are you looking for in this next chunk for the Sharks team to see what they can do against the league's top talent?
Well, they're going to have to stay with it. They're going to have to stick with the program. They got to keep, you know, adhering to Ryan Warshawski's system of solid defense and pressure offensively, strong forechecking, and really four-line relentless pressure and movement. They've got to do that. They got to drop penalties. They've improved their penalty killing quite a bit. Goaltending's part of that, but they've also improved the way they're in front of the goaltenders. The next step is to improve the power play a little bit. And, you know, we're going to see some wrinkles with some young kids getting opportunities. Sam Dickinson's going on the power play this week. That's really interesting. And Dmitry Orlov, who's been a nice find a nice addition to the team as a veteran stabilizing force. Hasn't been perfect, but he's earned a lot because he's so hard to play against in front of his own goaltender, and so he's established a tone that I think is really important. And, you know, hey, L.A. is having a good year now. Drew Doughty is hurt, though. He's out week to week, so it's too bad he's not going to be available for the game, it doesn't look like. You know, there are guys that are starting to get bumps and bruises, and, of course, that's the next challenge, too. You have four games in a week, and sure, you're not traveling, but you're just coming off a decent-sized road trip. And then you got teams like Boston and Ottawa coming in back-to-back. They're not going to take, any days off against you. So I think that's the excitement of that, is to see all of these different types of teams coming in. Utah's really fast. They beat the Sharks 6-3 earlier in the year. They really pounce on the opportunities. They've got players like Clayton Keller and Nick Schmaltz that are really good. Then you've got L.A., of course, Andrei Kopitar in his last season in the NHL. He's already announced it. He's one of the players that you pay to see on other teams. He's just such a smart guy and somebody that, even though he plays for a team that Sharks fans don't care for, they really respect him. Drew Doughty, on the other hand, is somebody that they love to hate. He's too bad he's not playing. But they're having a good year. And then you've got, Ottawa. Oh, by the way, that night that L.A. is in town, too, Phil, is the night that everybody here in San Jose is going to honor Joe Thornton for his induction into the Hockey Hall of Fame. And it's not going to be as ostentatious is the wrong word, as celebratory and as effusive as what happened when they retired his number. It's not going to be that big of a ceremony, but still it's going to be one filled with love and one in which the fans can get together with Jumbo and just really celebrate the remarkable achievements that he has had in his career to get to the Hall of Fame. I was there. It was an amazing ceremony, and now we're going to have one at SAP Center when the Kings are in town. And then, of course, Ottawa and Boston coming in. And the Bruins are always a tough ticket here. They're a team that plays a hard brand of hockey. They've got Charlie McAvoy now out with an injury. This is the time of the year when the people start to get banged up. Knock on every piece of wood possible. The Sharks have been relatively healthy, although they don't have Jeff Skinner. And they got Michael Mesa, their 18-year-old, has been out with an injury. He's going to be out for a while. So they've got a few things that are starting to creep in. But that's part of the survival of the NHL. The NHL is a marathon, not a sprint. You just have to survive through all that. And that's part of the fun.
Yeah. And sometimes when those opportunities pop up, some other guys find ways to get into those situations. Like you said, with Sam Dickinson, who's getting in that power play, like you said, some guys, when those injuries pop up, other guys need to come step up, and maybe you see and discover something, and that's what Coach Warsawski is probably hoping to navigate here moving forward. Last question here, who's been your underrated Shark this start of the season, as we're like a little bit over a month in? Who's been the most unsung hero for the Sharks so far this year?
Without question in my mind, it's Alex Wennberg. He's been absolutely terrific in all aspects of the game. He's not a superstar player. He is exceedingly consistent. He's very professional. He's a great human being, and he kind of galvanizes that group of Swedish guys that are on the team. He's also from Sweden. But a good example of that, we got a minute to go in the game against Seattle, and the game is over. Seattle's already ahead 4-1. They just scored the empty net shorthanded goal. The Sharks pulled out all the stops to try to get back in. It didn't work that night. But yet Alex Wennberg is still skating back and back-checking and doing everything you're supposed to do and playing the right way. That's great leadership. He's a guy that very quietly goes about his business and brings other players along with him. Macklin Celebrini does that in a more of a spectacular way. But a player like that and William Eklund, his line mate, these are two guys that I think do a fantastic job of making sure that that the team is playing the right way. And I'll add one other player, too.
Yeah.
Denny Desharnais on defense probably has been the most consistent overall in the defensive zone of all the defensemen on the team. And he wasn't necessarily expected to do that. Everybody was looking at him as kind of a seventh defenseman, maybe getting into one out of every four or five games. But they've relied on him for penalty killing. He's done a really good job. He's embraced his role. Those are a couple of the unsung guys that are on the team that, maybe don't get noticed as much because of Macklin and because of Will and because of Eklund, too, and Askarov. But I think that they deserve a lot of credit. And, again, if I had to pick one, I'd pick Wennberg.
Well, the feeling is great among the, I would say, in San Jose. And The hope is that it continues and they find ways to win and grind, especially with this four-game homestand coming up. And Dan, I can't wait to be at one of these games. I'll be there on Sunday, so I can't wait to take the trip up to see the Boston Bruins take on the San Jose Sharks.
Well, make sure you scoot up to the booth and say hello, too. It'll be great to see you, and we always appreciate everybody tuning in the Fresno region that has always supported hockey and supported the Sharks. So thank you.
Absolutely, Dan. Of course, you can listen to them tomorrow on 790 tonight, or tomorrow against the Mammoth from the Shark Tank. Dan, appreciate it as always. Have a great call the rest of this weekend. I'll see you Sunday.
We'll talk soon. Thanks, Phil.
All right, Dan Ruzanowski of the San Jose Sharks here on 1430 ESPN. All right, let's take a break. Let's wrap up this hour next on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Leader here on this Monday afternoon here on 1430 ESPN. Monday Night Football coming up very soon here in a matter of minutes. It is Cowboys-Raiders tonight. Daily Spread brought to you by Chichancey Gold Resort Casino. Not trying your luck with your teams. Try your luck with Chichancey Gold Resort and Casino today. Drive up the mountain and win big. Jorge, Cowboys-Raiders in Vegas. Don't cheat. Do you want to guess what the spread is tonight?
I was going to cheat.
Don't cheat.
Let me see. Two-digit?
Two-digit spread? No. It's a single-digit spread.
Six points.
Dallas by 3.5.
Really? Okay.
Is that respect to the Raiders?
I don't want to do a whole touchdown, so I thought that was maybe like below a touchdown.
You were trying to give it as far as that's concerned. Okay. What do the Raiders have in this game going for it?
It feels like the Raiders is one of the lowest teams in the NFL. it's not like the Cowboys are the best team, but
it's an offense that is like so explosive, like sometimes that it can get it its own way, like the Cowboys, especially with the last time they played, which was two Monday nights ago. I had to sit through that against Arizona. Good God.
That was such a... Okay.
Versus the Raiders who... I don't know if there's an offense I trust less than the Raiders offense. Is there any? I mean, the Browns? Is the Titans? I kind of trust the Titans a little bit more than the Raiders offense right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here are your last Raider results. It was Thursday night last week against the Broncos, 10-7. You watched that one, didn't you? That 30-29 Jaguars just miracle win in overtime. The Raiders then got shut out earlier against the Chiefs. Raiders won by 10 over the Tennessee Titans. That's their one of two wins this year. Shellacked by the Colts. Lost to the Bears by 1. Shellacked by the Commanders, who are horrible. Lost by 11 to the Chargers on Monday Night Football. Beat my Patriots by 7.
I just realized that they're basically one win away from the Raiders.
The Cowboys, yeah.
They're 3-5-1.
3-5-1, the Raiders are 2-7. We are a far cry from that extremely entertaining Thanksgiving game from 2021.
Yeah.
Do you remember that game?
I do.
One of my favorite games I ever watched.
Derek was still there, right?
Derek? Yeah. That was the 21 Magical Raiders season with Rich Bisaccia.
True.
Leading the way. Should have got the job, so they went to Josh McDaniel, who I have a friend who's a Raider fan, and anytime I mention Josh McDaniel's name, she just yells, "Clown! Clown!" And anytime I mention the Raiders' name, she says, "Trash!"
I mean, I never understood why they, like, he got, like, several offers for...
He's just a coordinator.
What he did in Denver was horrible.
Yeah.
And people were like, maybe he's still good. No, look at what we did in Denver.
Has this been a disaster for Pete Carroll? Like, I don't know if I had high hopes for this Raiders team, but do you feel like it's been a disaster?
This is season 2, right?
This is season one of Pete Carroll. It feels like two seasons if you're a Raiders fan. Yeah, it certainly does feel like two seasons if you're a Raiders fan. Has this been a disaster from Pete Carroll?
I think the way Pete Carroll carries things and does...
Has the game passed him by?
I don't think so. I think he just got to get... A lot of those players aren't the players that he likes to have there. He just, you know, inherited them because they were there. Some players are the ones he wants, and I want to see him next year. If things still, you know, are carried like this, then maybe he has. But so far, I mean, it's hard to tell.
I actually have a little bit of faith in the Raiders tonight. I think they could win this game tonight. And there's only one way they can win this game tonight.
I also think they could win it.
Because I think Ashton Gentry is a difference maker in this game tonight, because the Cowboys' rush defense has just been leaky, to say the best. Cowboys have allowed 30.8 points per game this season, the second worst in the NFL. Only the Bengals, who average... Just imagine the Bengals giving up 33.4 points per game. Just insane. It is a favorable matchup, although we will see new additions for the Cowboys on defense tonight. Quinyon Williams, who's a plus player. Logan Wilson, Super Bowl player from the middle linebacker position. Maybe the Cowboys are better in the run game tonight because of those two additions. Will we see that change? Maybe. So that's the difference in tonight's game. Can the Raiders run against the new additions for the Cowboys defense, which they clearly needed help for? Is this the start of a Cowboys run where they can get back into a conversation in the NFC? You know, frankly, that feels like a little bit of a long shot hope for that.
I think this is going to be a good night for Brock Bowers.
Brock Bowers?
Yeah.
One catch for 31 yards in Thursday night last week. He was great 2 weeks ago, though, against Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I would know because I lost to him by two. who are you going with? I'm tempted to pick the Raiders tonight, but part of me is just like sitting here and looking at this offense, and I'm like, if there's any team they can score against, it's this team. It's this Cowboys team. Outside of that, I don't know if I have any faith that the Raiders could score against anybody else the rest of the way. I've liked the Cowboys offense from a standpoint.
Me too.
I think I'm going to go on a limb. I'm going to say the Raiders win outright at +3.5. I think the Raiders somehow find a way, because the Cowboys somehow find a way to lose. These are two teams that somehow find a way to lose. That's quite simply what it is.
Raiders by a field goal.
That's what you got?
Yeah.
Are we both Raiders
by a field goal? I'll go with it.
I can't believe I'm saying it. I can't believe I'm picking the Raiders.
You know what? I'll go Raiders by 2 points.
2 points. All right. All right. Wow, we both got the Raiders tonight. So congrats, Cowboys.
Hey, guess who's going to D.C.?
Who?
Yeah, Moody.
Moody?
Oh, they're just uniting with Debo.
There you go. Breaking news with 10 seconds to go in the show. All right, Jorge, we'll be back tomorrow, 3 o'clock.
Great show.
Monday Night Football, Cowboys, Raiders, next on 1430 ESPN.